Live from historic downtown Carlisle, Pennsylvania, home of founding father James Wilson, 19th century hymn writer George Duffield, 19th century gospel minister George Norcross, and sports legend Jim Thorpe. It's Iron Sharpens Iron. This is a radio platform in which pastors, Christian scholars, and theologians address the burning issues facing the church and the world today. Proverbs chapter 27, verse 17 tells us iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. Matthew Henry said that in this passage, we are cautioned to take heed with whom we converse and directed to have in view in conversation to make one another wiser and better. It is our hope that this goal will be accomplished over the next 2 hours, and we hope to hear from you, the listener, with your own questions. And now here's your host, Chris Arnson.
Good afternoon, Cumberland County, Pennsylvania, Lake City, Florida, and the rest of humanity living on the planet Earth who are listening via live streaming at ironsharpensironradio.com. This is Chris Arnson, your host of Iron Sharpens Iron Radio, wishing you all a happy Tuesday on this 8th day of August, 2023. And I'm thrilled to have back on the program a returning guest for part two of a discussion that we began last Tuesday on August 1st, part two of Defenders of the West, the Christian Heroes Who Stood Against Islam. And that is the title of the latest book by Raymond Ibrahim, who is a translator, author, columnist, widely published expert on the Middle East and Islam. He is the distinguished Senior Shulman Fellow at the Gatestone Institute and the Judith Friedman Rosen Fellow at the Middle East Forum. And it's my honor and privilege to welcome you back to Iron Sharpens Iron Radio, Raymond Ibrahim.
Hello, Chris. Very good to be with you again. I look forward to our part two conversation.
Yes, and I will give our listeners our email address right now if they have a question. It is chrisarnzen@gmail.com, chrisarnzen@gmail.com. And just as I did last time, I want to give a caveat in the beginning of the program that my guest and I have significant theological differences. He is from an Eastern Orthodox background, and I am from a Reformed Protestant background, although I was raised Roman Catholic. I abandoned Roman Catholicism in my 20s and embraced the gospel that I believe to be the true biblical gospel and the true biblical Christ and so on. This is a different kind of a program where we're focusing on a very significant series of wars from history. And one of the reasons I thought this would be a valuable program, and even have two parts, is because there is even debate amongst Protestants and even my fellow Reformed Protestants on whether or not we are to view the Crusades as a positive or negative thing. And of course, there is always the possibility that many will believe that that there is a combination of both, as with most things on this earth. I just wanted to let you know that I am still on a journey into understanding the Crusades in a deeper way. So I'm not even 100% sure where I stand yet on this issue. And let's summarize what we took care of in our discussion last time. The Crusades, if you could remind our listeners, the period of time in history where these wars were taking place, where the Roman Catholic Church was basically protecting Western Europe from invading Islamic armies, if I'm not mistaken, but you could pick it up from there.
Sure, Chris. So the Crusades really begin in 1095 AD. That's when they're called for, and I'll get to that. But I think the most important aspect, and to recap, as you said, is to really present the Crusades not in a vacuum, which is often what happens, but to sort of give you the history, the backdrop of how we got to the Crusades. So after the Prophet Muhammad dies and basically a caliphate rises to power, and essentially declares what's known as jihad on the Christian world. So at the time, Christianity was understood to be spread all over North Africa, the Middle East. All these, of course, is where, you know, the Middle East is where Christianity was born, obviously. So that makes sense. And in parts of Europe, southwest of the Danube and the Rhine, meaning not in Germany, not really in Scandinavia. I'm talking about the 7th century. At any rate, if you look at a map of what was Christian then, during this jihad that was declared, three quarters of it was conquered. So all of North Africa, Egypt, Tunisia, Libya, Morocco, Algeria, Spain, into France. We know the famous Battle of Tours in 732. And then later on in the East, you get the Turks. They become Muslim. They declare jihad. They embrace the jihadist ideology. They quote the same Quran verses and so forth. And they enter and conquer Eastern Europe, the Balkans specifically. And as late as 1683, they reached Vienna. So now the Crusades, where do they fit? So basically, after the initial conquest of North Africa and the Middle East, and Europe was really the word the West, when we use it and we refer originally to Europe, what that really meant was the westernmost bastion of Christianity that did not get swallowed up in this Islamic revolution that overwhelmed the Christian world. So it was continuously harried in warfare and so forth, as I mentioned. But right before the Crusades, right around 1070, the Turks, as I was mentioning, they went into the Balkans. But before that, they started going to the Balkans in the 1300s and so forth. Before that, in 1070, they started conquering what's known as the Eastern Roman Empire, the Byzantine Empire. And that was a big chunk of it was in Asia Minor, what we call today Turkey. And during those wars, literally the sources talk of Christian peoples, Eastern Orthodox Christians, being by the thousands and tens of thousands being massacred, enslaved, burned alive, everything you can imagine, their churches, thousands of churches. Most of them were actually Armenians, but also Greeks. Again, this is ironic because when people speak of the Armenian genocide at the hands of Turks, they often are talking about the early 20th century and late 19th century. But actually, you go back a thousand years ago, as I am, in the mid 11th century, and there was the same sort of horrific tale. At any rate, the Eastern Roman Emperor Alexius called for Western aid to stem this tide of this renewed jihad, which was swallowing up new lands of the Byzantine Empire, Asia Minor. And that was what brought about the Crusades. So the Franks, or, you know, that's what they're called in the sources, basically the European knights, the Franks, mostly centered in Francia, modern-day France, but also German nations and northern European nations, all basically heard the call in Clermont. Pope Urban basically said what I've been saying, and he gave many anecdotes and examples of what the Turks were then doing to Christians in the East and to churches. And they were also doing the same thing in Jerusalem, which was a land, which was a place of pilgrimage for Europeans. And they were attacking the Europeans and killing them and raping them, enslaving them, and all sorts of things. So that was the origin. That's what made the Catholic Church call for the Crusades. It was understood in the concept of just war theory, meaning that the aggressors were the Muslims, or the pagans, as they're known in the sources, and it is incumbent on Christians, and they often would quote the Church Father Augustine, it's incumbent on Christians to fight them back because they're the aggressors. Innocents are being killed, and if we just stand by or turn the other cheek, then that's a bad thing because the aggressors live on and the innocents die. So that's what propelled so many Europeans to give up everything in Europe and go on this horrific trek into the Middle East, where even before they reached the Holy Land, they were dying of starvation and thirst and battles with Turks and other Muslim groups and plagues and so forth. But to them, it was worth it because they were fulfilling Christ's command to love your fellow man, to love God with all your heart, which they understood in that sense dealt with Jerusalem. That's the land. Pre-modern Christians had a very deep rootedness to the sense of land and regions and places. So for Muslims to be doing that in Jerusalem, where Christ lived, died, and was resurrected, was a travesty. So that also propelled them. But that's in a nutshell. And I think what I just said is very different from how the Crusades are usually presented. usually, like I said, they're presented in a vacuum, and people don't tell you. I've read historians, they'll make it sound as if Islam and Muslims were peaceful with Christians, and they did nothing for centuries, and then all of a sudden, the Catholic Church decided to go and cause, you know, mayhem. But in fact, it was a response, a belated response, as Bernard Lewis, the historian, famously said, to 4 centuries of nonstop jihad and basically swallowing up Christian territory and slaughtering Christians.
So this was a war of defense that the Church of Rome had waged.
Yeah, it was seen as a just war, which right. would mean a war of defense. The Christians did not see themselves as initiating the conflict. It was seen as a rebuttal, a response to what the Muslims had been doing for the reasons that I had given.
And earlier, I identified my guest, Raymond Ibrahim, as Eastern Orthodox. More specifically, he is a Coptic Christian or from that background. They are sometimes called Oriental Orthodox. But I learned from my guest that the Coptics do not like that label. Am I right?
Yeah, I mean, it's because it's sort of redundant. Oriental means Eastern, and then you have the Eastern Orthodox. So it's sort of a semantic distinction, I suppose, but itself, it's kind of a meaningless word, because you could just as well say Eastern, right?
Right. And this book, as you have informed me, to remind our audience or to tell them for the first time if they missed part one, it is not any kind of defense of Roman Catholic theology other than the just war theory. You are not a Roman Catholic yourself, so neither you or I, myself being a Reformed Protestant, had a dog in this fight, or should I say our specific people, although there is a much more close harmony between Eastern Orthodox and Roman Catholicism. There are also stark differences that remain today.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not Catholic, never have been, never plan on being, and I'm approaching it with a historian's lens. And in fact, yeah, the Catholic Church and the Coptic Church actually have been at odds as well. So I have no reason to be standing up for, you know, Catholicism. I'm essentially approaching it from a historical perspective. But, you know, having said all that, I can also say that if it wasn't for the essentially Catholic defense of Europe, there's a good chance that Europe could have turned Islamic all those centuries ago, because it was the Catholic. It's ironic to me when I look at Pope Francis, and he's so open to Islam, so, you know, tolerant. He gives talks in areas that have Muslims and covers up the cross and does all sorts of things, says bring down the walls. And it's ironic to me because he's the exact opposite of what his forebears, the original Catholic popes, were. They were actually the most militant and, called for defense against Islamic incursions. So if it wasn't for that, there's a good chance. If it wasn't, and remember, when I say Catholic, I don't mean, it's sad because when you say the word Catholic, it brings this whole connotation. But I'm just talking about pre-modern Christians who, in a sense, weren't even really called Catholics. The whole Catholic term comes up in juxtaposition to Protestantism, so you understand the distinction. But they just, when you look at the sources, they call themselves, they describe themselves as Christians. Their motivations, often a lot of these crusaders who I chronicle in my books, are very altruistic. They'll talk about they're willing to die for Christ, et cetera, et cetera. So it doesn't necessarily ring a Catholic bell in the sort of the stereotypical sense that I think we have today.
Yes, and I'd like to also remind our listeners or inform them for the first time, if they didn't hear part one, that this book has been highly praised by one of my favorite political commentators on Fox News, Victor Davis Hanson. He stands far above, in my opinion, the vast majority of political experts on Fox News or anywhere else for that matter. And he was very frequently on Tucker Carlson, who I miss greatly. I didn't always agree with Tucker Carlson. I have my questions about his understanding of Christianity and theology, but he is definitely a superb political talk host. And And I know that Victor Davis Hanson was just as upset, if not more, as I was when Tucker was forced out of there. But that's just to give you kudos that somebody as highly respected as Victor Davis Hanson also wrote the foreword to this book. So that's something to seriously consider, and was definitely a part of the reason that I gave this book more serious attention and wanted to interview you. Now, as you already have said, and as I brought up last time, the majority of people, and I would say including Roman Catholics, today have a knee-jerk reaction to the Crusades and will automatically identify it as a horrible, wicked blight on the history of Christendom. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, I'm almost certain that the last three popes, John Paul II, Benedict, and Francis, have all apologized and asked for forgiveness from the Muslims for the Crusades. I don't recall anybody from the papacy apologizing for the torture and murder of Protestants, but they did, I'm nearly certain, ask for forgiveness of the Muslims for the Crusades. Did you ever share that opinion? Was this something that you grew to understand as being not only a positive thing, but a necessary thing for the survival of Christianity in the West? And was this journey of understanding the situation more deeply brought about while you were writing the book, or did you already have a settled opinion before the book?
Well, in my earliest youth as a teenager, and you know, in my early years in college, I just assumed the Crusades were what they were presented, which was basically, you know, a hostile Catholic church that just went and committed atrocities against peaceful Muslims. That was already sort of in the air. It's not as bad as today, of course, in the so-called woke culture. But as I studied in college, and I majored in history, including the medieval era, and you mentioned Victor Davis Hanson. He was my professor, actually. And so that was definitely a blessing. But I learned a whole lot, because one of the things I learned to do quickly was to really rely on primary sources. And I also read Arabic. And so I could read European primary sources. I could read Arabic, Islamic primary sources, and they just were a complete different story from how the Crusades were being represented by so-called secondary histories, meaning modern day historians of today who supposedly have accessed, looked at, analyzed the primary sources, and now they're telling us what it was all about. Well, the way they represented it is not how the primary sources represent it. And the primary sources represented the way I just mentioned it, including the Muslim ones. So the Muslim sources are very clear that they conquered Christian lands, that Christianity is an abomination, that the cross must be broken, that Christians must be subjugated, et cetera, et cetera. And the Quran also has very, it teaches that, essentially calls them infidels, Christians. It says they must be warred on until they are subjugated, et cetera, et cetera. And the European sources were also the same and unequivocal about all the damage that occurred all throughout Europe in the beginning of the Muslim conquests, for example, in Spain as well, and the Mediterranean islands, and then, of course, the time right before the Crusade. So I learned quickly that it was very much, and I believe intentionally, being misrepresented, the Crusades, from what they were. Again, and I don't have a dog in the doctrinal or theological argument between Protestants and Catholics. The only theological concern I would have is, did it conform to just war theory? And it did. So in and of itself, that's the main point. And it did conform to it. So I could call it a Christian crusade in that sense, because it was part and parcel of just war theory. But yeah, I've also come to learn that so much of history, the more you dig into it, the more you find out, it's very much being misrepresented. The totality of Islam's relations with Western world and non-Muslims in general is very, very skewed. If you go to, and I've taken courses in elite colleges, including places like Georgetown University, And if you study the history of Islam, it almost invariably begins with the colonial era. Okay, and the reason for that is because after 1,000 years of warfare, and finally the Europeans actually managed to turn the tide, and they actually entered the Middle East and Africa and India and so forth, and began to colonize. So you can see them as the aggressors in that sense. So, but history begins just with that, without telling you how they had been at war for a millennium, and the colonialist powers actually understood that war, and entering into those lands was partially motivated by trying to defang the innate violence that Islam had, including by bringing them up to, you know, speed by with progress and civilization and so forth.
And one thing that I did not ask you last time, I don't know if you have an opinion on this, but there are people that I know, and a couple whom I have interviewed, who are Christian apologists who engage Muslims in debate and dialogue. And a couple of them have said one of the greatest errors of the United States in regard to the use of our military and being involved in wars overseas that do not directly affect the United States. Some of these men, or at least a couple of them, these Christian apologists, have said that it is a grave mistake to topple a dictator who is a more nominal or secular Muslim, because even though we may be dismayed and repulsed and infuriated and disgusted by some of their behavior or much of their behavior, at the same time, they have kept the militant, Quranically faithful, those who are faithful to the Hadith and so on, Muslims at bay, who are in reality a greater threat, especially to Christians. And so these apologists have totally opposed before and after the toppling of, let's just say, Muammar Gaddafi, for instance. Even though he was a tyrant, he was a more secular Muslim. Would you agree with that ideology, yeah, or worldview?
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that, and have actually written much in agreement with it. And it's a basic, simple fact. The older generations of Muslims were more progressive, if you like to use that word, or less radical. And this is a whole different topic of why radical Islam, so-called, has made such an ascendancy in recent decades. But these earlier ones were definitely more secular, and they were the main stalwarts against their own people, the radicals amongst them. It includes Saddam Hussein. It includes Muammar Gaddafi. It includes Assad and his father before them in Syria. And the proof of it is, if you look wherever you look, and these dictators get ousted, it gets so much worse. And one of the ways it gets worse is for Christians. And so that's a litmus test itself, you can see. So, for example, in Iraq, I never heard about Christians really being persecuted there.
Right.
And then once Saddam was toppled, and then you saw in Syria where they also almost toppled Assad, but they took part, that's where you got ISIS, the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria.
Right.
That's where they came to power. Same thing in Libya. You know, some of the worst Islamic, you know, the 21 Coptic Christians who were beheaded on the beach in Libya. That was after Muammar was toppled. And oftentimes, sadly, it's the U.S. and other Western powers that aid these Islamic terrorists, but then they're called freedom fighters. And right, this was, of course, the same story with Al-Qaeda. When we were fighting with Russia or in the Cold War in Afghanistan, we funded and supported Al-Qaeda, but they were called freedom fighters. And we saw how that ended up. So it's the same thing. Western elements continue funding and sponsoring Islamic terrorists, and then they present them to the West as freedom fighters against dictators. But what they are is Sharia fighters, really. And they really take their countries down a very dark hole, much worse than their dictators. And like you said, the dictators aren't that great either. but at least in this sense, we're on the same page in that they too don't want the radical Muslims around, or definitely not in charge.
Right. Well, we are going to go to our first commercial break, and when we return, we're going to immediately delve into some of the specific heroes by name, of which my guest Raymond Ibrahim has written in Defenders of the West, the Christian heroes who stood against Islam. We didn't get too much involved in identifying specific individuals last time. And as soon as we were over on part one, during the phone conversation I had with Raymond off the air after the show was over, he said, we didn't even really get to identify some of the Christian heroes specifically. So I wanted to give him an opportunity to do that. That's one of the main reasons we have part two today. So you'll be hearing that, and we invite you to send in your questions to chrisarnzen@gmail.com, chrisarnzen@gmail.com. As always, give us your first name at least, your city and state, and your country of residence if you live outside the USA. Only remain anonymous if your question involves a personal and private matter. Don't go away. We'll be right back after these messages.
The Mid-Atlantic Reformation Society presents The Future of Christendom 2023, The Gospel at War, September 15th to the 16th in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, featuring Dr. James White of Alpha and Omega Ministries. We are excited to be including a formal debate in this year's conference. Dr. James White of Alpha and Omega Ministries will be debating Dr. Gregory Coles, author of Single Gay Christian, A Personal Journey of Faith and Sexual Identity. The debate topic: is gay Christian a biblically acceptable identity for a member of Christ's church? So come join us for the 6th Future of Christendom Conference. The event will take place at Spooky Nook Sports in Mannheim, Pennsylvania, and will run from Friday evening through all day Saturday, with an invitation to the Sunday morning worship service of the Independence Reformed Bible Church. This will be a weekend packed with practical teaching, with a theme of the gospel at war in many areas of our culture, including government schools, the Supreme Court, missions, feminism, and even the church pulpits. Head to futureofchristendom.org.
James White of Alpha Mega Ministries here. I'm very excited to announce that my longtime friend Chris Arnzen of Iron Sharpens Iron Radio and I are heading down to Atlanta, Georgia again for the G3 National Conference. That's Thursday, September 21st through Saturday the 23rd, on a theme that I have been preaching, teaching, writing about, and defending in live public debates for most of my life: the sovereignty of God. I'll be joined on the speaking roster by Steve Lawson, Vody Balcom, Paul Washer, Virgil Walker, Scott Annual, and Josh Bice, founder of G3 Ministries. And there's more great news. Chris Arnzen of Iron Sharpens Iron Radio can get you a 30% discount off the registration fee. Go to g3min.org, that's g3min.org, and enter promo code G3ISIR. That's G3ISIR for the 30% discount. Chris Arnzen and I look forward to seeing you all Thursday, September 21st through Saturday the 23rd for the G3 National Conference in Atlanta, Georgia, on the sovereignty of God. Make sure you stop by the Iron Sharpens Iron radio exhibitor booth and say hi to Chris Arnzen while you're there. Go to g3min.org and enter promo code G3ISIR for your 30% discount off the registration fee.
Hi, I'm Brian McLaughlin, president of the SecureCom Group and an enthusiastic supporter of Chris Arnzen's Iron Sharpens Iron radio program. The SecureCom Group provides the highest level of security, closed-circuit television, access control, and communication systems for Manhattan's top residential buildings, as well as churches, commercial properties, municipalities, and more. We custom install exactly what you need to protect yourself, including digital recording, off-site viewing, and connectivity from most smart devices. From simple code-activated systems to the latest technology using facial recognition, the SecureCom Group has it. We also provide the latest in intercom and IP telephone systems. In addition, we provide superior networking platforms. We'll create, maintain, and secure your local network. Whether it's a Wi-Fi or hardwire network, we'll implement the latest secured firewall, endpoint solutions, and cloud backup. I would love to have the honor and privilege of helping protect the lives and property of Iron Sharpens Iron radio listeners and their associates. For more details on how the SecureCom Group may be of service to you with the very latest in security innovations, call 718-353-3355. That's 718-353-3355. Or visit SecureComGroup.com. That's SecureComGroup.com. This is Brian McLaughlin of the SecureCom Group, joining Chris Arnzen's family of advertisers to keep Iron Sharpens Iron radio on the air.
Puritan Reformed is a Bible-believing, kingdom-building, devil-fighting church. We are devoted to upholding the apostolic doctrine and practice preserved in Scripture alone. Puritan Reformed teaches men to rule and lead as image-bearing prophets, priests, and kings. We teach families to worship together as families. Puritan is committed to teaching the whole counsel of God so that the earth will be filled with the knowledge of God as the waters cover the sea. We sing the Psalms, teach the law, proclaim the gospel, make disciples, maintain discipline, and exalt Christ. This is Pastor David Reese of Puritan Reformed in Phoenix, Arizona. Join us in the glorious cause of advancing Christ's crown and covenant over the kings of the earth. Puritan Reformed Church. Believe, build, fight. PuritanPHX.com.
We here at Iron Sharpens Iron Radio praise God for the generous monthly financial support of Royal Diadem Jewelers, educated by and affiliated with the American Gem Society, Jewelers of America, and the Gemological Institute of America. For the perfect custom-designed engagement ring or any one-of-a-kind piece of jewelry created exactly according to your imagination and specifications, Royal Diadem Jewelers has you covered. No matter where you live in the world, Royal Diadem will walk you step-by-step through every stage of the process and even hold a high-tech internet virtual visit using state-of-the-art jewelry design technology to serve you. They start by listening carefully to determine your needs. They're interested in making what you want, not what they want to sell you. From rough design to digital model, to photorealistic image, to wax prototype model, to the finished product, they're continually listening to your input, likes and dislikes, making any changes necessary along the way. This will ensure that your custom jewelry will turn out exactly as you dreamed and well beyond your expectations. Visit royaldiadem.com. That's royaldiadem.com today. Sterling Vanderwerker, owner of Royal Diadem Jewelers, his wife Bronnie, his business partner and manager Brian Wilson, and the entire family thank you all for listening to, praying for, and supporting the work of Iron Sharpens Iron Radio.
And don't forget, folks, RoyalDiadem.com is still offering Iron Sharpens Iron Radio this mind-blowing opportunity. They are going to give us 100% of the profits from any sale of jewelry to an Iron Sharpens Iron Radio listener, simply if that listener mentions Iron Sharpens Iron Radio when making the purchase. Whether you are purchasing jewelry they already have in stock at RoyalDiadem.com, or if you're having a customized piece of jewelry created, like an engagement ring, like taking your church logo, parachurch logo, your denomination logo, your seminary logo, or anything else that you can conjure up in your mind that you want turned into a physical piece of jewelry, they will do that, and I've seen firsthand the mastery that they have over custom designing jewelry. So please, if you have any intention on purchasing jewelry for yourself or someone you love, please go to RoyalDiadem.com soon, because we have no idea when they're going to pull the plug on this mind-blowing offer where we receive 100% of the profits from that sale if you mention Iron Sharpens Iron Radio. That's royaldiadem.com. We're now back with our guest today, Raymond Ibrahim, and we are discussing part two of a discussion that we began last Tuesday on August 1st, Defenders of the West, the Christian Heroes Who Stood Against Islam. And our email address is chrisarnzen@gmail.com if you have a question. chrisarnzen@gmail.com. Give us your first name at least. City and state and country of residence. Only remain anonymous if your question involves a personal and private matter like the one I am about to read. Before you get into the specific identities of these Christian heroes who stood against Islam, I think this would be a great question to get a response from before we get into that. We have an anonymous listener who says, I'm remaining anonymous because I am in a church who is another one of those churches that views the Crusades only in a negative light. And I was wondering, being a Protestant myself, are you aware of what any of the reformers had to say about the Crusades since the Crusades ended centuries before the Reformation?
Yeah. I think what happened is during the time of Martin Luther and the earliest reformers, it was strategic to bring up anything negative about the Catholic Church, including the legitimate complaints, to make the case against the Catholic Church. So obviously there were the legitimate complaints, but I think it got to the point where anything from history was immediately also turned around and twisted in a way to attack the Catholic Church, amongst them the Crusades. What's that?
I was just going to say, do you know for a fact that was all of them, like not only Luther, but
no,
Calvin?
I just know from my gleamings of readings that various early Protestants would say this or that, usually negative things about the Crusades. But no, I can't really speak to anyone specifically.
Okay. That is actually a catalyst for me to delve into that myself, to see what Luther, Calvin, Zwingli, John Knox, and others may have said in their opinion about the Crusades, because they, being from Western Europe, might be honest enough to realize that they might have been under Islamic rule, that would have possibly been a much greater hindrance to the Reformation than the tyranny of Rome. So,
right. But right. I would think there were early reformers who would appreciate, the Crusades vis-a-vis Islam. But like I said, it got everything Catholic became seen through a jaundiced lens,
right,
including the Crusades. So it got lumped in with all the sins of the church, basically.
Right. And a listener last time, I thought, brought up a good analogy for those of my Protestant friends and brothers and sisters who have their ire raised, and they are, without investigating the facts of this, getting upset that I would allow somebody to defend wars waged by the Roman Catholic Church, and which we have already said were wars of defense. Keep in mind our own wars, if you want to bring it much closer to modern history, not only the War of Independence that we had with England, but World War I and World War II, for instance. Do you see value in those wars? And were these predominantly Christian people, regenerate people? I'm not talking about nominal Christians, but were these, in the majority, regenerate people who were the political leaders and military leaders who were at the forefront of these wars? I think that you would probably find a tiny minority were actually born-again, regenerate people. George S. Patton, who many people view as a military hero of the United States, he was certainly not a Christian. He actually had very bizarre pagan ideas of his own. He invented his own religion, and I believe he believed in reincarnation and so on. So that's just something to lessen the hostility that you may have if you contemplate that kind of analogy.
And can I add something to what you just said?
Oh, yeah, sure.
It's actually a quote from another historian. He's a Crusades historian. You probably heard of him, Thomas Madden. He's written many books. Yeah, and he writes something that very much complements what you just said. I'm going to read it right now. It's a quote, and here's the quote. "It is easy enough for modern people to dismiss the Crusades as morally repugnant or cynically evil. Such judgments, however, tell us more about the observer than the observed. They are based on uniquely modern, and therefore Western values. If from the safety of our modern world we are quick to condemn the medieval crusader, we should be mindful that he would be just as quick to condemn us. Our infinitely more destructive wars, waged for the sake of political and social ideologies, would, in his opinion, be lamentable wastes of human life. In both societies, the medieval and the modern, people fight for what is most dear to them. That is a fact of human nature that is not so changeable."
Amen. That's a great quote.
Yeah.
Well, if you'd like to, oh, by the way, I have to tell our anonymous listener, please give us your full name and mailing address. Of course, this will be done through email, so I'm not going to identify you. Send me an email with your full name and address, because you have won a free copy of Defenders of the West, The Christian Heroes Who Stood Against Islam, compliments of Bombardier Books, which is an imprint of Post Hill Press, and also compliments of Cumberland Valley Bible Book Service, cvbbs.com, who will ship that book out to you at no cost to you or Iron Trippin's Iron Radio. If you are a first-time questioner, let us know that as well, because you will also receive a brand-new New American Standard Bible in addition to Raymond Ibrahim's book. But if you could now get into these specific heroes that you wanted to highlight.
Sure. So I basically chronicled the lives of 8 different men. And like I think I might have said this earlier in our first interview or not, but I have another book before this. It's called Sword and Scimitar, 14 Centuries of War Between Islam and the West. And what I did in that book is in 8 chapters, I looked at the 8 most decisive battles between the West or Europe and the Islamic world, and what came out of those battles and how they really changed the map often. But what I did with this book, Defenders of the West, is I basically looked at the warfares between Islam and Europe and Christians through the lens and the lives of 8 men, 8 men who identify as being especially impressive in their battles with Islam. One of the ones that I like, and a lot of people like, is actually the first chapter, and I'll give you a brief summary of his life. And he's actually a crusader. He's of the First Crusade. So I think that's pretty apropos to discuss him. His name is Godfrey de Bouillon, and he basically hailed from what we today would be modern-day Belgium. But he was basically seen as a Germanic fighter, also seen as a Frank. He was some kind of descendant of Charlemagne, the emperor of Francia. And even his father was in the Battle of Hastings, the Norman conquest in 1066 of England. So he had a pretty impressive lineage at the time, and he was rich, and he had lots of lands, and he was a duke, essentially. And after, as I mentioned, once the West got the call from the East of what was happening at that time, what the Turks were doing, he was one of the first to respond, and he did it by selling so much of his land and to fund his crusade, and he actually became very impoverished. And just to give you, we're lucky to have, and I did a lot of searching, but we're lucky to have a lot of good quotes about him from contemporary sources. In fact, people who knew him. So the first is not someone who knew him, but it's someone who is actually the opposite, the cynical Edward Gibbon, the historian, who basically is a paragon of the Enlightenment and also had very love for the early Catholic Church. He still had to give credit to Godfrey, and he wrote, quote, "His piety, though blind, was sincere. He reserved his enmity for the enemies of Christ, and his pure and disinterested zeal was acknowledged by his rivals. In the mind of Godfrey, every human consideration was subordinate to the glory of God." Now, so that's Edward Gibbon in talking 6 centuries later. But here's what William of Tyre, who actually was a young man or a young boy before in Godfrey's lifetime, he wrote of him, quote, "He was a man of deep religious character, devout and God-fearing, merciful and just." Excuse me. "He scorned the vanity of the world, a trait which was rare at his time of life," meaning when he was young, "and especially in one belonging to the military profession. He was constant in prayer, assiduous in good works, and noted for his generous liberality to the poor. in the use of arms and in the practice of military tactics, he was in the judgment of all without a peer. And it goes on, other people, another biographer who knew Godfrey writes, quote, charity, that he was known for many virtues, including charity to the poor, mercy to wrongdoers, humility, clemency, sobriety, justice, and chastity. Another one writes, and this is interesting, he gave the impression of being a monk rather than a soldier. However, when he realized that the enemy was at hand and battle imminent, he feared the attack of no man. What breastplate or shield could withstand the thrust of his sword? And that's an interesting quote because there's actually an anecdote where he supposedly sliced the Turkish jihadist in half with a sword swing and terrified the Muslims during the Battle of Antioch. At any rate, so that's a little background of who Godfrey was and what motivated him. He sold everything, traveled, and he was one of the main leaders of the First Crusade. He went through countless adventures, got sick, almost died. He was mauled by a bear that actually attacked another pilgrim, as they called themselves. And he came in its defense, in the pilgrim's defense, and fought the bear and barely killed it, but almost died as well. So definitely a lot of exciting stories. And he was also right before one of the major battles. And again, to go back to just war logic, he and other leaders sent a delegation to talk to a Turk who was besieging them after they had taken Antioch. And in their message, the messenger, the Christian messenger, said to the Muslims, "You are guilty of invading Christian lands with unbridled covetousness and killing everyone. If you had any kind of rule of law and wanted to act fairly towards us, we would negotiate with you, reserving the rights of honor, and demonstrate to you with incontrovertible arguments what ought to belong to Christians." And here they're referring to what I was talking about earlier about how the Middle East was Christian, but it was conquered and subjugated and taken violently by Muslims. And that's what called for the First Crusade. At any rate, another interesting thing about Godfrey, and I don't want to give too much, I don't want to be a spoiler for anyone who wants to read it, but he was actually also elected to be the first king of Jerusalem after they had liberated it from Islamic control. And he refused to be called the king, and he eventually became known as basically the defender of Jerusalem. The reason he wouldn't take it, and the quote attributed to him, is he said, "I will not wear a crown of gold in the city where my Lord wore a crown of thorns." So that gives you a little bit of background of some of these crusaders who, you know, you might otherwise have thought of in a very cynical way as just being impious and just trying to go and destroy and kill Muslims for fun. His life is very different. It's as a final anecdote, I spoke to someone recently who had read the book and I asked him, who was your favorite? And he said Godfrey, to the point that, so Godfrey is known in the sources as the Duke. I mentioned earlier, he was a Duke of various kingdoms. And this man told me his wife's pregnant with a child, and they're going to name him Duke just because of this.
Well, why don't you move on to the next one before we go to our midway break?
Sure, there's so many of them, and it's more instructive. Like I said, I don't want to give too many spoilers, but to give you how the book's divided around these characters. So there's really three main theaters of war that I focus on. One is the Crusades, and I look at three different characters, one of which we spoke about, Godfrey. The other is King Richard the Lionheart, and his life is also equally fascinating. I mean, any one of these lives really could make for a blockbuster movies, and they would not even be fake. They would be based on historical primary sources, but they would be too pro-Christian, I assume, and too anti-Muslim, so that's why you'll never see that. But Richard is another one of those characters that's often, again, depicted in a very negative light. Sort of a reckless brute, and he certainly was fierce, and he was actually a giant. Apparently they managed to measure him, and he was something like 6'6" in height at that era. And he was and even Muslim sources, there's so many Muslim sources I document that quote their fear of Richard whenever he showed up. So he's another one. And the third crusader I mentioned is Louis the Ninth of France, also known as Saint Louis, and he's actually interesting because he had one of his crusades was an abysmal failure. Excuse me. But what's interesting about him is, again, you get a very interesting and paragon of Christian humility. His whole life, when you read about it, I mean, whether if one rises above the Catholic Protestant divide and you don't even know what he is, you just think he's really a saint. I mean, pure altruism. He would feed the beggars and take them behind his castle and feed them with his own hand. And he helped women who were living lives of prostitution. And he gave so much money away to Christians in the Middle East who were suffering. He stayed in prison in Egypt, even though they allowed him to go because his own men were imprisoned and other Christians. So his life is, again, very, very altruistic. And that's, I guess, why he became a saint in the Catholic Church. But he was not very effective at the Crusade. So that's also interesting. The other two fields that I focus on is the Reconquista, which is the reconquest of Spain from Islam. As I mentioned earlier, Spain was conquered by Muslims in the 8th century, and it took many centuries, almost a millennium actually, to get the final vestiges of Islam scratched out in Granada. And there I look at El Cid. We mentioned this before, Charlton Heston. That's how most people know him. But his life too is very fascinating. We have very good records that I quoted from. And also Ferdinand III, who was a king of Spain. And he was actually a cousin of Louis, St. Louis, a first cousin. And he had the same adamant stand against Islamic aggression. And again, very, very fascinating stories. And when you see what these people went through at the hands of Islam, including in European territory, because now we're talking about Spain, and what they had to do to expel it. And then the final theater of war I look at is the Balkans. And there we got three characters. One is John Hunyadi, who was a Hungarian nobleman. And the other is John Castrioti, better known as Skanderbeg, and he was an Albanian noble. And the final one is Count Dracula, Vlad Tepes, or Vlad the Impaler, and he's a Romanian noble. And all of them have very similar stories against the Turks. The Turks invaded their lands. They enslaved them. Both Skanderbeg and Vlad were actually hostages of the Turks for many years in their youth. One of them actually was sexually abused by the sultans. Another one's brother was sexually abused and turned into basically a catamite. And
what is that?
You know,
what's a catamite? What's a catamite?
A catamite is basically a sex slave, male sex slave. Or like a concubine, but a male. Usually like in the context of pederasty.
Just like what occurs amongst extremist Muslims in Afghanistan.
Yeah, there's a whole tradition about that. In Afghanistan, you're right. I forget what it's called, Baki Bazaar, or some has a strange name.
And there's a movie. Yeah, I may have won an Academy Award, but it was an excellent movie called The Kite Runner.
Right. I was just actually reading today in Austria, Muslim migrants molesting little boys, and then saying because it's normal in our culture.
By the way, could you pick up where you left off, and don't forget where you left off, because we have to go to our midway break.
Okay.
And please keep in mind, folks, that the midway break is longer than the other breaks because Grace Life Radio, 90.1 FM in Lake City, Florida, requires of us a longer break in the middle of the show because the FCC requires of them to localize this program geographically to Lake City, Florida, where they're located. And they do so with their own public service announcements and other local things while we simultaneously air our globally heard commercials. Please use this time wisely. Write down as much of the contact information as you possibly can, provided by as many of our advertisers as you can, so that you can more frequently and successfully respond to our advertisers. And we hope that means that sometimes you'll buy their products, use their services, and visit their churches. But when you cannot do any of that, please at least thank our advertisers for sponsoring the show. We need our advertisers to exist, folks. So if you love the show, please at least thank them. And send in your emails to Raymond Ibrahim at chrisarnson@gmail.com. chrisarnson@gmail.com. We'll be right back after these messages. Don't go away.
The Mid-Atlantic Reformation Society presents The Future of Christendom 2023, The Gospel at War, September 15th to the 16th in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, featuring Dr. James White of Alpha and Omega Ministries. We are excited to be including a formal debate in this year's conference. Dr. James White of Alpha and Omega Ministries will be debating Dr. Gregory Coles, author of Single Gay Christian, A Personal Journey of Faith and Sexual Identity. The debate topic,
Is gay Christian a biblically acceptable identity for a member of Christ's Church? So come join us for the 6th Future of Christendom Conference. The event will take place at Spooky Nook Sports in Mannheim, Pennsylvania, and will run from Friday evening through all day Saturday, with an invitation to the Sunday morning worship service of the Independence Reformed Bible Church. This will be a weekend packed with practical teaching, with a theme of the gospel at war in many areas of our culture, including government schools, the Supreme Court, missions, feminism, and even the church pulpits. Head to futureofchristendom.org.
James White of Alvin Mega Ministries here. I'm very excited to announce that my longtime friend Chris Arnzen of Iron Sharpens Iron Radio and I are heading down to Atlanta, Georgia again for the G3 National Conference. That's Thursday, September 21st through Saturday the 23rd, on a theme that I have been preaching, teaching, writing about, and defending in live public debates for most of my life, the sovereignty of God. I'll be joined on the speaking roster by Steve Lawson, Vodi Balcom, Paul Washer, Virgil Walker, Scott Annual, and Josh Bice, founder of G3 Ministries. And there's more great news. Chris Arnzen of Iron Sharpens Iron Radio can get you a 30% discount off the registration fee. Go to g3min.org, that's g3min.org, and enter promo code G3ISIR. That's G3ISIR for the 30% discount. Chris Arnzen and I look forward to seeing you all Thursday, September 21st through Saturday the 23rd for the G3 National Conference in Atlanta, Georgia on the sovereignty of God. Make sure you stop by the Iron Sharpens Iron radio exhibitor booth and say hi to Chris Arnzen while you're there. Go to g3min.org and enter promo code G3ISIR for your 30% discount off the registration fee.
Such a blessing to hear from Iron Sharpens Iron radio listeners from all over the world. Here's Joe Riley, a listener in Ireland, who wants you to know about a guest on the show he really loves hearing interviewed, Dr. Joe Moorcraft.
I'm Joe Riley, a faithful Iron Sharpens Iron radio listener here in Athy in County Kildare, Ireland, going back to 2005. One of my very favorite guests on Iron Sharpens Iron is Dr. Joe Moorcraft. If you've been blessed by Iron Sharpens Iron Radio, Dr. Moorcraft and Heritage Presbyterian Church of Cumming, Georgia, are largely to thank, since they are one of the program's largest financial supporters. Heritage Presbyterian Church of Cumming is in Forsyth County, a part of the Atlanta metropolitan area. Heritage is a thoroughly biblical church, unwaveringly committed to Westminster standards, and Dr. Joe Moorcraft is the author of an 8-volume commentary on the larger catechism. Heritage is a member of the Hanover Presbytery, built upon the foundation of the apostles and prophets, Jesus Christ himself being the chief cornerstone, and tracing its roots and heritage back to the great Protestant Reformation of the 16th century. Heritage maintains and follows the biblical truth and principles proclaimed by the Reformers. Scripture alone, grace alone, faith alone, Christ alone, and God's glory alone. Their primary goal is the worship of the triune God that continues in eternity. For more details on Heritage Presbyterian Church of Cumming, Georgia, visit heritagepresbyterianchurch.com. That's heritagepresbyterianchurch.com. Or call 678-954-7831. That's 678-954-7831. If you visit, tell them Joe Riley, an Iron Sharpens Iron radio listener from Athy in County Kildare, Ireland, sent you.
Iron Sharpens Iron Radio first launched in 2005. The publishers of the New American Standard Bible were among my very first sponsors. It gives me joy knowing that many scholars and pastors in the Iron Sharpens Iron Radio audience have been sticking with or switching to the NASB.
This is Daryl Bernard Harrison, co-host of the Just Thinking podcast, and the NASB is my Bible of choice.
I'm Pastor Pastor Tom Buck of First Baptist Church of Lindale, Texas, and the NASB is my Bible of choice.
I'm Pastor Kent Keller of Faith Bible Church in Sharpsburg, Georgia, and the NASB is my Bible of choice.
I'm Andrew Rappaport, the founder and executive director at Striving for Eternity Ministries, and the NASB is my Bible of choice.
I'm Mark Grimaldi, pastor of Sovereign Grace Church of Greenbrier, Tennessee, and the NASB is my Bible of choice.
Christopher Cookston, pastor of Prineville Community Church in Prineville, Oregon, and the NASB is my Bible of choice.
I'm Matt Tarr, pastor of High Point Baptist Church in Larksville, Pennsylvania, and the NASB is my Bible of choice.
Here's a great way for your church to help keep Iron Sharpens Iron Radio on the air. Pastors, are your pew Bibles tattered and falling apart? Consider restocking your pews with the NASB. And tell the publishers you heard about them from Chris Arnzen on Iron Sharpens Iron Radio. Go to nasbible.com. That's nasbible.com to place your order.
Hello, my name is Anthony Uvinio, and I'm one of the pastors at Hope Reformed Baptist Church in Quorum, New York, and also the host of the ReformRookie.com website. I want you to know that if you enjoy listening to the Iron Sharpens Iron radio show like I do, you can now find it on the Apple's iTunes app by typing Iron Sharpens Iron Radio in the search bar. You no longer have to worry about missing a show or a special guest because you're in your car or still at work. Just subscribe on the iTunes app and listen to the Iron Sharpens Iron radio show at any time, day or night. Please be sure to also give it a good review and pass it along to anyone who would benefit from the teaching and the many solidly reformed guests that Chris Arnzen has on the show. Truth is so hard to come by these days, so don't waste your time with fluff or fake news. Subscribe to the Iron Sharpens Iron radio podcast right now. And while you're at it, you can also sign up for the ReformRookie.com podcast and visit our website and the YouTube page. We are dedicated to teaching Christian theology from a Reformed Baptist perspective to beginners in the faith as well as seasoned believers. From Keach's Catechism and the Doctrines of Grace to the Olivet Discourse and the Book of Leviticus, the Reformed Rookie podcast and YouTube channel is sure to have something to offer everyone seeking biblical truth. And finally, if you're looking to worship in a Reformed church that holds to the 1689 London Baptist Confession of Faith, please join us at Hope Reformed Baptist Church in Quorum, New York. Again, I'm Pastor Anthony Uvinio, and thanks for listening.
If you love Iron Sharpens Iron Radio, one of the best ways you can help keep the show on the air is by supporting our advertisers. One such faithful advertiser who really believes in what Chris Arnzen is doing is Daniel P. Puttafuoco, serious injury lawyer and Christian apologist. Dan is the president and founder of the Historical Bible Society. Their mission? To foster belief in the credibility of Scripture as the written word of God. They go to various churches, schools, and institutions to publicly display a rare collection of biblical texts, along with a fascinating presentation by Mr. Buttafuoco demonstrating the reliability of Scripture. To advance the cause of the gospel, they created a beautiful, perfect facsimile of the genealogy of Jesus Christ from the original engravings contained in a first edition 1611 King James Bible. This 17th century hand-engraved chart shows the family tree of Jesus Christ going back to Adam and Eve. This book is complete with gorgeous full-size illustrations of Noah's Ark and the Tower of Babel, and an explanation of why the genealogy of Jesus is so important for his claims to the throne of the universe. Originals of this work are in museums, and nobody has ever made it accessible to the public in a large book form before. You can have your own copy of this 44-page genealogy book for a donation of $35 or more. Visit historicalbiblesociety.org. That's historicalbiblesociety.org. Thanks for helping to keep Iron Sharpens Iron Radio on the air.
This is Pastor Bill Sasso, Grace Church at Franklin, here in the beautiful state of Tennessee.
Our congregation is one of a growing number of churches who love and support Iron Sharpens Iron Radio financially. Grace Church at Franklin is an independent, autonomous body of believers which strives to clearly declare the whole counsel of God as revealed in Scripture through the person and work of our Lord Jesus Christ. And of course, the end for which we strive is the glory of God. If you live near Franklin, Tennessee, and Franklin is just south of Nashville, maybe 10 minutes, or you are visiting this area, or you have friends and loved ones nearby, we hope you will join us some Lord's Day in worshiping our God and Savior. Please feel free to contact me if you have more questions about Grace Church at Franklin. Our website is gracechurchatfranklin.org. That's gracechurchatfranklin.org. This is Pastor Bill Sasser wishing you all the richest blessings of our sovereign Lord, God, Savior, and King Jesus Christ, today and always.
Getting a driver's license, running a cash register, flipping burgers, passing sixth grade. Do you know what they all have in common? They all require training, assessments, and certifications. But do you know what requires no training at all? Becoming a parent. My name is A.M. Brewster. I'm the president of Truth Love Parent and host of its award-winning podcast. I've been a biblical family counselor since the early 2000s, and what I've discovered is that the majority of Christian parents have never been biblically equipped to do the work of the ministry in their homes. That's why Truth Love Parent exists. We serve God by equipping dads and moms to be the ambassador parents God called and created them to be. We produce free parenting resources, train church leaders, and offer biblical counseling so that the next generation of dads and moms can use the scriptures to parent their children for life and godliness. Please visit us at truthloveparent.com.
Every day at thousands of community centers, high schools, middle schools, juvenile institutions, coffee shops, and local hangouts, Long Island Youth for Christ staff and volunteers meet with young people who need Jesus. We are rural and urban, and we are always about the message of Jesus. Our mission is to have a noticeable spiritual impact on Long Island, New York, by engaging young people in the lifelong journey of following Christ. Long Island Youth for Christ has been a stalwart bedrock ministry since 1959. We have a world-class staff and a proven track record of bringing consistent love and encouragement to youths in need all over the country and around the world. Help honor our history by becoming a part of our future. Volunteer, donate, pray, or all of the above. For details, call Long Island Youth for Christ at 631-385-8333. That's 631-385-8333. Or visit liyfc.org. That's liyfc.org.
Charles Haddon Spurgeon once said,
"Give yourself unto reading. The man who never reads will never be read. He who never quotes will never be quoted. He who will not use the thoughts of other men's brains proves that he has no brains of his own. You need to read."
Solid Ground Christian Books is a publisher and book distributor who takes these words of the Prince of Preachers to heart. The mission of Solid Ground Christian Books is to bring back treasures of the past to minister to Christians in the present and future, and to publish new titles that address burning issues in the church and the world. Since its beginning in 2001, Solid Ground has been committed to publish God-centered, Christ-exalting books for all ages. We invite you to go treasure hunting at solid-ground-books.com. That's solid-ground-books.com and see what priceless literary gems from the past or present you can unearth from Solid Ground. Solid Ground Christian Books is honored to be a weekly sponsor of Iron Sharpens Iron Radio.
And our listeners today might find a special interest in a couple of books that are offered by solid-ground-books.com. One is by an author who shares the last name of my guest today. I don't know if there is a relation or not, but A.S. Ibrahim, he has written a book called Reaching Your Muslim Neighbor with the Gospel, How to Better Engage and Share the Gospel with Muslims. That's one book that you can pick up at solid-ground-books.com. And also a book by my very dear friend of many years, going back to 1995, Dr. James R. White of Alpha and Omega Ministries has written the classic book, What Every Christian Needs to Know About the Quran. And there are many other books in this treasure trove known as solid-ground-books.com. Please purchase frequently, purchase generously. Always mention that you heard about them from Chris Arnzen at Iron Sharpens and Iron Radio. And I'm also going to make an added appeal to my listeners. Please, I'm urging you to help solid-ground-books.com out by placing a larger order than you normally do, or even placing an order for the first time. They are in a struggle right now financially. Their sales are in a bit of a slump, and they are a vital sponsor of Iron Sharpens Iron Radio. So please help them out, and you're going to be helping yourself or anybody for whom you are purchasing books from solid-ground-books.com, because they publish nothing but the very finest in Christian literature. So go to solid-ground-books.com today and mention Chris Arnzen of Iron Sharpens Iron Radio. Before I return to my guest today, Raymond Ibrahim, and our discussion of his book, Defenders of the West, the Christian Heroes Who Stood Against Islam. This is part two of a discussion that we began last Tuesday. And before we return to that discussion, we just have a couple of important announcements. Please, if you love the show, folks, you don't want it to disappear, go to ironsharpensironradio.com, click support, then click to donate now. You could donate instantly with a debit or credit card in that fashion. And if you prefer snail mail, mailing a physical check to a physical address from your local post office, there is also a physical address that will appear on your screen when you click support at ironsharpensironradio.com, where you can mail your checks made payable to Iron Sharpens Iron Radio. If you want to advertise with us, whether it is your church, parachurch ministry, your business, your private practice, like a law firm or a medical firm, or just a special event that you want to promote, whatever it is, as long as it's compatible with what we believe, we would love to help you launch an ad campaign quickly, because we are just as much in urgent need of your advertising dollars as we are in your donations. So please send me an email to chrisarnzen@gmail.com. chrisarnzen@gmail.com, and put advertising in the subject line. Remember, folks, I never want anybody listening to my program to give less money than they normally give to their own local church where they are a member on the Lord's Day in order to give Iron Sharpens Iron Radio a gift. In other words, do not cut in to the money you have set aside for your Lord's Day giving to your own church in order to send us a check or contribute over the website. Please don't do that. Also, if you are really struggling to survive and make ends meet, wait until you are back on your feet and more financially stable before you send us a financial gift. As urgently and as desperately as we need your donations, I do not want your church or your family to suffer from your generosity to me. But keep in mind, if you do have extra money collecting interest in the bank, and you have extra money beyond the funds that you need to provide for church and family, you have extra money for benevolent, recreational, and trivial purposes, please share some of that money with us if you want us to remain on the air. Go to ironsharpensironradio.com, click support, then click to donate now. I also want to remind you of the three-day conference that's coming up September 15th, 16th, and 17th. That's a Friday, Saturday, and Sunday in Manheim, Pennsylvania, which is Lancaster County. My dear friend, Dr. James R. White of Alpha and Omega Ministries, is among a number of speakers at the Mid-Atlantic Reformation Society's Future of Christendom Conference. The Gospel at War is the theme. And during that three-day conference, there will be a debate that Dr. James R. White is having with a professing homosexual, Dr. Gregory Coles, author of Single Gay Christian, A Personal Journey of Faith and Sexual Identity. Dr. White will be opposing the thesis, Is Gay Christian a Biblically Acceptable Identity for a Member of Christ's Church? Obviously, Dr. Coles will be affirming that thesis. So, if you would like to attend this three-day conference and the debate, the debate, by the way, is Saturday, September 16th at 3:30 p.m. Go to futureofchristendom.org, futureofchristendom.org. Go there quickly, because they are going to be raising the rates on your registration fee if you don't go there very soon. That's futureofchristendom.org. Lastly, if you are not a member of a biblically faithful, Christ-honoring, theologically sound, doctrinally solid church, no matter where on the planet Earth you live, I have an extensive list spanning the globe of biblically faithful churches, and I've helped many people in our audience all over the world find churches, sometimes within just a couple of minutes from where they live. That may be you, too, if you are without a biblically faithful church home. So send me an email to chrisarnson@gmail.com and put, I need a church, in the subject line. chrisarnson@gmail.com. I need a church in the subject line. That's also the email address to send in a question to Raymond Ibrahim on his book, Defenders of the West, The Christian Heroes Who Stood Against Islam. That's chrisarnson@gmail.com. Give us your first name, at least, your city and state, and your country of residence. We have Susan Margaret in Dauphin County, Pennsylvania, who wants to know, how much negative feedback have you got from either Christians or Muslims? And has any of that negative feedback been extremely intense and even life-threatening, especially when it comes to Muslims?
Yeah, I've gotten negative feedback in that sense and life threats.
Really?
And, from Muslims, sure. Many years ago, before Google had removed me basically out of its search engines, a lot of my articles and videos got around quite a bit. I remember one had something like 800,000 likes on Facebook. And at that time, I did get various emails and other things, which I won't get into. But it's kind of happily toned down because I'm very hard to find on the internet. You have to use one of these other different search engines to actually even see my stuff. And I think that's something obviously that affects a lot of people who are called on what they call the right, this basically censorship. But in a way, it's also kind of taken me out of the hostile circle as well, because people don't really see or read my stuff much anymore. But as far as Christians, not really. I haven't really. I know for a fact that a lot of institutions would want nothing to do with me, Christian institutions, because I'm seen as an Islamophobe or whatever the case may be. And a lot of just general institutions. We spoke last time about the right. U.S. Army War College,
which is right and, 5 minutes away from me.
Right, exactly, and how that unfolded. Again, by Muslim pressure and activist pressure from CARE and so forth. But on the whole, I'd say the response has been good. So I'm blessed with that.
Well, Susan Margaret, you have won a free copy of Defenders of the West. Make sure we have your full mailing address in Dauphin County, Pennsylvania. And we once again want to thank Bombardier Books and Post Hill Press and Cumberland Valley Bible Book Service for making this gift to you possible. That's cvbbs.com. Cumberland Valley Bible Book Service will be shipping that book out to you. We have, Timothy in Boise, Idaho. Timothy says, have you persuaded with your book those who were initially adamantly opposed to the thesis of the book who have come on your side wholeheartedly?
I would think so, and I base that on – I get a lot of emails on my website and people telling me basically that, that they thought, especially from a Christian point of view, that they thought they need to be basically passive, turn the other cheek, and that when they saw this history of people, Europeans, fighting in the name of Christianity and defensive warfare, basically, like I said, all in accordance with just war theory – that it's given them a different perspective on things. And I think that's one of the most important lessons, I think, of the book. Earlier we were talking about the different characters, but I think the fundamental lesson is that in the West, especially any Christian denomination, whether it's Protestant, Catholic, Orthodox, if it's Western, it seems to be tainted with this sort of pacifism, almost paralysis of doing anything or being seen as an aggressor, even verbally. And it just wasn't always like that for millennia, including amongst Protestants, I would argue. So I think it's refreshing for people to see that that's the case. It wasn't always that you have to be this obligatory doormat to any kind of evil and just give in because you're supposed to turn the other cheek. I think we discussed a little bit about even Jesus himself, you know, implicitly was okay with this. He had a centurion come to him, and not only did he oblige him and heal his servant, he never told him what he told everyone else, which is repent. He could have told him, leave the military, you're killing people, et cetera, et cetera. He didn't. So I think from the start, even with Jesus himself, there's an understanding and a place for what would be considered state-sanctioned violence, basically, in protection, not aggressive violence. I'm talking about defending, punishing criminals and so forth.
Yes, and self-defense. He told his disciples to buy a sword if they didn't have it. So obviously there was a reason for that. That wasn't just for cutting up fish. Let's see here. We have an anonymous listener who says, just like a previous anonymous listener, I am having a bit of conflict with Christians in my own congregation over this issue, who are adamantly opposed to ever putting a seal of approval on the Crusades. Have you ever considered, or perhaps even participated in, a public debate, just like Chris Arnes and the host of this show has orchestrated many times on different subjects?
I've given a lot of lectures and I've been invited to a lot of places, but it's rare that I get into a debate, even though I would heartily welcome one. In fact, going back to the War College incident, when they pressured the War College to basically back out and cancel my event, and like I said, in the end, it was reinstated about a year later. But one of the things their point was that everything I was saying was just fabricated, even though my book, it was a previous book that I was talking about, that I was invited to talk about, Sword and Scimitar, has over 1,000 footnotes to authenticated sources. But they were basically trying to say I'm making it up. And so I offered to the War College and said, well, why don't we have a debate?
Excellent.
Have care or whoever bring up their best, who are, you know, most qualified historian, and have him debate me. And they wouldn't do it. And so I don't get into debates, even though I welcome them, because I think those who would be on the other side know that they're going to be made mincemeat of.
Well, I, as everybody who listens to this show regularly knows, I am a passionate lover of debates. In fact, I just advertised one that I orchestrated for the Mid-Atlantic Reformation Society, coming up with Dr. James R. White and a individual, Dr. Gregory Coles, who identifies himself as a gay Christian. And I have been doing this since 1996 was my first public debate, and have done orchestrated many of them. So I think that it is always a good idea to have debates when you have qualified people on both sides, and it's a moderated, strictly timed debate, so you don't have arguments, you don't have filibustering and all that kind of thing that can go on. You have a moderator who will stop people when they start hurling ad hominem remarks, that sort of thing. So, you know, if you're not going to do a debate on important topics between people who oppose one another, you wind up just having both sides of this issue. The advocates of both sides of this issue just wind up talking about each other behind their back. To me, that's a serious sin, and where you get involved in hyperbole and slander and all kinds of things that when you're saying things and believing things that are not challenged by a person who is a knowledgeable expert on that issue. So I am all for the debates. And in fact, if anybody listening knows of somebody who would like to debate my guest, Raymond Ibrahim, on this topic, I would love to even have a debate on my show about this. Now, what do you think is some information? I know you've already given us a wealth of information, but key points that the general public is totally ignorant of, that basically keeps them yoked to a negative understanding of the Crusades, where it is nothing but something that should be categorized as an atrocity committed by one group of humans toward another, that both, when both claim to believe in God and so on.
You know, I've spoken to a lot of professional Crusades historians, and there's a lot of good ones who get it and who will actually basically make the same argument I would, which was that Islam was the aggressor for centuries. The Crusades were a rebuttal, a response to ongoing violence, and so forth. But unfortunately, the dominant strain, it's almost like with Hollywood, you know, you have Christians who make good movies and so forth, like that recent one that was made about child abduction or child sex slavery. And then you have the actual, the main, you know, the dominant voice suppressing it and shutting them down and just kind of putting out their own stuff, their own filth. So it's the same with academia. The voices that get heard are those historians who make the argument that people want to hear, which is that the Crusades are bad, that they're a reflection of, you know, violent Christians, that Christians can never pay back and apologize enough to Muslims. I remember a few years back in Germany, some sort of pilgrimage was begun by hundreds of Christians, and they wore shirts with Arabic. It said, "I apologize." And they marched supposedly to Jerusalem, apologizing to every Muslim they met on the street. And it's, you know, again, it just belies a tremendous amount of ignorance of what really happened and who the aggressor was. But it's not their fault when they read books or watch documentaries that make it sound like everything was fine between Muslims. John Esposito, he's a professor from Georgetown University. I quote him somewhere in a book, and he wrote something to paraphrase, but it's almost an actual verbatim quote, something like 4 centuries of peace elapsed between the Muslim and Christian worlds before a conniving, vicious papal play created the Crusades. And basically since then, everything's been bad between Muslims and the West, and the Muslims are still waiting. So even when Muslims engage in terrorism today, it's because they have a grievance against the Crusades. And this is just pure bunk, and I'm not the first one to say this. A lot of historians will tell you this is absolute nonsense, but it's a question of who gets a platform to speak and who doesn't. And it's, and as with everything else we're seeing, it's the other side, the so-called left, that has a platform to spew out what amounts to unadulterated lies, whereas those who have the truth are basically sidelined, suppressed, censored, including on Google and social media, etc.
You know, I forgot to ask you if you had finished what you were saying before the final or the midway break, I should say. Before the midway break, we were discussing the atrocities committed even by the Quranic, the Quranically faithful and Hadith committed Muslim extremists who, although they will execute a homosexual, they are involved in pederasty and homosexual acts towards boys. And this even goes on now in Afghanistan. And we were talking about where I mentioned the kite runner. And by the way, a listener said to me, I don't believe that the kite runner won any Academy Awards, but it was a 2008 nominee for the Critics' Choice Award and the for Best Picture and Best Young Actor, and the 2008 Golden Globe Awards nominees for Best Original Score and Best Foreign Language Film. So winner of Critics' Choice Awards and nominee for Golden Globe Awards. But did you have anything further you wanted to say about that? Because I kind of cut you off.
No, I think I basically got the gist out of it, but thanks for asking.
All righty. And by the way, thank you, listener, who sent me the correction in about the awards that the Kite Runner film has won. And we're going to send you, or I should say CVBBS.com is going to send you a copy of Defenders of the West. Thanks for making that correction for my statement. This is the kind of thing that people really have to investigate before forming an instantaneous opinion just because of what you heard the majority in modern culture say. This goes with really anything in life. And before we go to a final break in a few minutes, I want you to really pitch some of the things perhaps that you haven't said yet to convince people who are total skeptics to the point that they don't even want to open up your book, convince them that, you should be delving into this and why?
Yeah, well, I understand that sentiment. You know, if, if there's something that you're adamantly opposed to, you might not want to explore it, and you don't want to have your beliefs challenged or your conviction in concerning whatever topic we're discussing, in this case, let's say the Crusades. I would argue anyone who really is interested should consult that book, because most of the words are not even my own. It's constant quotes from both European and Muslim sources, and it really, I try to position it, and that's why people like Victor Davis Hanson endorse it and other historians, because it's an objective inquiry, basically. But if someone is adamant about not believing or even giving the time of day to consider a counter argument, there's nothing you can do. That's just how it is. They're going to stick with it. But I think it's important, especially for Christians of any denomination, to be cognizant of that history, because it'll really open your eyes to, A, the threats that Christians experienced all throughout history, especially vis-a-vis Islam, which is a very major topic. Islam is, even though it's not brought up, but Islam, especially in Europe, you know, in 2050, according to Pew, Islam is set to be the dominant religion in most European nations. That's not far off, 2050. And wherever Islam is today, in especially countries like the UK, Germany, Scandinavia, Austria, you have constant violence, rape, crime, attacks on Christian churches and symbols. And then there was an interesting study that came out. If you look at the countries that don't have Islam, like Poland, pure peace, nothing. So I think it's very instructive. And then a final important point, I guess, is, and maybe this will go into the next break, we can talk about the continuity of Islamic intolerance vis-a-vis Christians. Because today, again, most people, including Christians in the West, are completely oblivious to the fact that Christians all around the world, especially in the Muslim world, and we're talking hundreds of millions of Christians, are being persecuted in a very dramatic and savage way. We only get the tip of the iceberg, but so much stuff goes on, and it's in keeping with Islamic teaching and culture, and nobody's even hearing about it. And this sort of thing will, in time, be spreading to the West. It already is in different manifestations, sort of legal warfare on Christian expression. But the violence that's in the Muslim world and other countries, including India, and there's a resurgent Hindu nationalism there that's targeting Christians. All of that, I think, is left unchecked, is going to metastasize.
We'll take one more question before the break that actually leads us into our current day. We have Terrence from Suffolk County, Long Island, New York, who asks, and he also says, President Trump was well known for saying that he destroyed ISIS. Although they appear to be laying low, have they really been destroyed?
Yeah, well, yes and no. And this is a good question, in which I've discussed in different mediums. But basically, the problem is we always think of these Islamic terror groups as finite organizations. We think of Al-Qaeda, we think of ISIS, and the list goes on and on, Boko Haram, Hamas, Hezbollah, etc. And yeah, you can defeat them, but the problem is the ideology continues and it permeates all segments of Islamic society, and that's why these groups, and even not groups, sometimes the worst acts of terrorism are not from a Muslim who's part of any formal group. He's just a regular lone wolf, quote-unquote, Muslim, who's, again, exercising his jihadist imperative against Christians or whatever, non-Muslims in general, and in engaging in acts of terrorism. So, you know, it's the chicken or the egg, which came first. And it's not the Islamic terror group. It's the Islamic teachings, which are central to the Quran and the broader scriptural literature tradition of Islam, the Hadith and the Sirah and so forth, that create a constant supply of these terrorists.
Now, which, in your opinion, posed a greater threat to humanity, ISIS or the Taliban? The Taliban, from what I understand, is still in existence and is a part of those militant Muslims that we were mentioning earlier that rise in power when the United States and other armies destroy the dictatorships of less radical Muslims.
Exactly. And that's what I was going to say. Basically, both groups are equally dangerous, and both of them are follow the same exact teaching. So there's nothing really unique about them other than their own specific geographical singularity. But as you said, both of them really came in to the vacuum after the United States got rid of secular forces. So ISIS, Islamic State in Iraq and Syria, came into Iraq because of Saddam and came into Syria during the civil war with Assad. And the same thing, the Taliban, I still marvel that after declaring war on them in September 2001 or after that because of the attacks of September 1, over 20 years later, the Taliban, after facing supposedly the full might of the United States army and military and economic might, 20 years later, they're in power again. And all we have to show for it is the Biden administration just left billions of dollars worth of weapons. Right. And now they're also treating with them as a as an actual political entity, even though this is the Taliban. These are the guys who gave sanctuary to Osama bin Laden, who masterminded the attacks that killed over 3,000 Americans. So all of that, 20 years of billions of dollars wasted, and nothing's changed. If anything, the Taliban's in a better position.
Well, we're going to our final break. If you have a question, please send it in immediately because we're rapidly running out of time. Chris Arnson at gmail.com. Give us your first name at least, city and state and country of residence. Don't go away. We'll be right back with Raymond Ibrahim.
The Mid-Atlantic Reformation Society presents The Future of Christendom 2023, The Gospel at War, September 15th to the 16th in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, featuring Dr. James White of Alpha and Omega Ministries. We are excited to be including a formal debate in this year's conference. Dr. James White of Alpha and Omega Ministries will be debating Dr. Gregory Coles, author of Single Gay Christian, A Personal Journey of Faith and Sexual Identity. The debate topic: is gay Christian a biblically acceptable identity for a member of Christ's church? So come join us for the 6th Future of Christendom Conference. The event will take place at Spooky Nook Sports in Mannheim, Pennsylvania, and will run from Friday evening through all day Saturday, with an invitation to the Sunday morning worship service of the Independence Reformed Bible Church. This will be a weekend packed with practical teaching, with a theme of the gospel at war in many areas of our culture, including government schools, the Supreme Court, missions, feminism, and even the church pulpits. Head to futureofchristendom.org.
James White of Alpha Mega Ministries here. I'm very excited to announce that my longtime friend Chris Arnson of Iron Sharpens Iron Radio and I are heading down to Atlanta, Georgia again for the G3 National Conference. That's Thursday, September 21st through Saturday the 23rd, on a theme that I have been preaching, teaching, writing about, and defending in live public debates for most of my life: the sovereignty of God. I'll be joined on the speaking roster by Steve Lawson, Vody Balcom, Paul Washer, Virgil Walker, Scott Annual, and Josh Bice, founder of G3 Ministries. And there's more great news. Chris Arnson of Iron Sharpens Iron Radio can get you a 30% discount off the registration fee. Go to g3min.org, that's g3min.org, and enter promo code G3ISIR. That's G3ISIR for the 30% discount. Chris Arnson, I look forward to seeing you all Thursday, September 21st through Saturday the 23rd for the G3 National Conference in Atlanta, Georgia, on the sovereignty of God. Make sure you stop by the Iron Sharpens Iron radio exhibitor booth and say hi to Chris Arnson while you're there. Go to g3min.org and enter promo code G3ISIR for your 30% discount off the registration fee.
Hi, I'm Brian McLaughlin, president of the SecureCom Group and an enthusiastic supporter of Chris Arnson's Iron Sharpens Iron radio program. The SecureCom Group provides the highest level of security, closed-circuit television, access control, and communication systems for Manhattan's top residential buildings, as well as churches, commercial properties, municipalities, and more. We custom install exactly what you need to protect yourself, including digital recording, off-site viewing, and connectivity from most smart devices. From simple code-activated systems to the latest technology using facial recognition, the SecureComm Group has it. We also provide the latest in intercom and IP telephone systems. In addition, we provide superior networking platforms. We'll create, maintain, and secure your local network. Whether it's a Wi-Fi or hardwire network, we'll implement the latest secured firewall, endpoint solutions, and cloud backup. I would love to have the honor and privilege of helping protect the lives and property of Iron Sharpens Iron radio listeners and their associates. For more details on how the SecureComm Group may be of service to you with the very latest in security innovations, call 718-353-3355. That's 718-353-3355. Or visit SecureCommGroup.com. That's SecureCommGroup.com. This is Brian McLaughlin of the SecureComm Group, joining Chris Arnzen's family of advertisers to keep Iron Sharpens Iron radio on the air.
Puritan Reformed is a Bible-believing, kingdom-building, devil-fighting church. We are devoted to upholding the apostolic doctrine and practice preserved in Scripture alone. Puritan Reformed teaches men to rule and lead as image-bearing prophets, priests, and kings. We teach families to worship together as families. Puritan is committed to teaching the whole counsel of God so that the earth will be filled with the knowledge of God as the waters cover the sea. We sing the Psalms, teach the law, proclaim the gospel, make disciples, maintain discipline, and exalt Christ. This is Pastor David Rees of Puritan Reformed in Phoenix, Arizona. Join us in the glorious cause of advancing Christ's crown and covenant over the kings of the earth. Puritan Reformed Church. Believe, build, fight. PuritanPHX.com.
I'm Dr. Joseph Piper, President Emeritus and Professor of Systematic and Applied Theology at Greenville Presbyterian Theological Seminary. Every Christian who's serious about the Reformed faith and the Westminster Standards should have and use the 8-volume commentary on the theology and ethics of the Westminster Larger Catechism titled Authentic Christianity by Dr. Joseph Moorcraft. It is much more than an exposition of the Larger Catechism. It is a thoroughly researched work utilizes biblical exegesis as well as historical and systematic theology. Dr. Moorcraft is pastor of Heritage Presbyterian Church of Cumming, Georgia, and I urge everyone looking for a biblically faithful church in that area to visit that fine congregation. For details on the 8-volume commentary, go to westminstercommentary.com, westminstercommentary.com. For details on Heritage Presbyterian Church of Cumming, Georgia, visit heritagepresbyterianchurch.com, heritagepresbyterianchurch.com. Please tell Dr. Moorcraft and the saints at Heritage Presbyterian Church of Cumming, Georgia, that Dr. Joseph Piper of Greenville Presbyterian Theological Seminary sent you.
Getting a driver's license, running a cash register, flipping burgers, passing sixth grade. Do you know what they all have in common? They all require training, assessments, and certifications. But do you know what requires no training at all? Becoming a parent. My name is A.M. Brewster. I'm the president of Truth, Love, Parent, and host of its award-winning podcast. I've been a biblical family counselor since the early 2000s, and what I've discovered is that the majority of Christian parents have never been biblically equipped to do the work of the ministry in their homes. That's why Truth, Love, Parent exists. We serve God by equipping dads and moms to be the ambassador parents God called and created them to be. We produce free parenting resources, train church leaders, and offer biblical counseling so that the next generation of dads and moms can use the scriptures to parent their children for life and godliness. Please visit us at truthloveparent.com.
When Iron Sharpens Iron Radio first launched in 2005, the publishers of the New American Standard Bible were among my very first sponsors. It gives me joy knowing that many scholars and pastors in the Iron Sharpens Iron Radio audience have been sticking with or switching to the NASB.
I'm Pastor Nate Pickowitz of Harvest Bible Church in Gilmanton Iron Works, New Hampshire, and the NASB is my Bible of choice.
I'm Pastor Rich Jensen of Hope Reformed Baptist Church in Coram, New York, and the NASB is my Bible of choice.
I'm Pastor Sule Prince of Oakwood Wesleyan Church in Toronto, Ontario, Canada, and the NASB is my Bible of choice.
I'm Pastor John Sampson of King's Church in Peoria, Arizona, and the NASB is my Bible of choice.
I'm Pastor Chuck Volo of New Life Community Church in Kingsville, Maryland, and the NASB is my Bible of choice.
I'm Pastor Steve Herford of Eastport Baptist Church in Jacksonville, Florida, and the NASB is my Bible of choice.
I'm Pastor Roy Owens, Jr. of the Church at Friendship in Hockley, Texas, and the NASB is my Bible of choice.
Here's a great way for your church to help keep Iron Sharpens Iron Radio on the air. Pastors, are your pew Bibles tattered and falling apart? Consider restocking your pews with the NASB. And tell the publishers you heard about them from Chris Arnzen on Iron Sharpens Iron Radio. Go to nasbible.com. That's nasbible.com to place your order.
Hi, this is John Sampson, pastor of King's Church in Peoria, Arizona, taking a moment of your day to talk about Chris Arnzen and the Iron Sharpens Iron podcast. I consider Chris a true friend and a man of high integrity. He's a skilled interviewer who's not afraid to ask the big, penetrating questions while always defending the key doctrines of the Christian faith. I've always been happy to point people to this podcast, knowing it's one of the very few safe places on the internet where folk won't be led astray. I believe this podcast needs to be heard far and wide. This is a day of great spiritual compromise, and yet God has raised Chris up for just such a time. And knowing this, it's up to us as members of the body of Christ to stand with such a ministry in prayer and in finances. I'm pleased to do so and would like to ask you to prayerfully consider joining me in supporting Iron Sharpens Iron financially. Would you consider sending either a one-time gift or even becoming a regular monthly partner with this ministry? I know it would be a huge encouragement to Chris if you would. All the details can be found at ironsharpensironradio.com, where you can click support. That's ironsharpensironradio.com.
Today at thousands of community centers, high schools, middle schools, juvenile institutions, coffee shops, and local hangouts, Long Island Youth for Christ staff and volunteers meet with young people who need Jesus. We are rural and urban, and we are always about the message of Jesus. Our mission is to have a noticeable spiritual impact on Long Island, New York, by engaging young people in the lifelong journey of following Christ. Long Island Youth for Christ has been a stalwart bedrock ministry since 1959. We have a world-class staff and a proven track record of bringing consistent love and encouragement to youths in need all over the country and around the world. Help honor our history by becoming a part of our future. Volunteer, donate, pray, or all of the above. For details, call Long Island Youth for Christ at 631-385-8333. That's 631-385-8333. Or visit liyfc.org. That's liyfc.org.
I'm Dr. Tony Costa, professor of apologetics and Islam at Toronto Baptist Seminary. I'm thrilled to introduce to you a church where I've been invited to speak and have grown to love, Hope Reformed Baptist Church in Coram, Long Island, New York, pastored by Rich Jensen and Christopher McDowell. It's such a joy to witness and experience fellowship with people of God like the dear saints at Hope Reformed Baptist Church in Coram, who have an intensely passionate desire to continue digging deeper and deeper into the unfathomable riches of Christ in His Holy Word, and to enthusiastically proclaim Christ Jesus the King and His doctrines of sovereign grace in Suffolk County, Long Island, and beyond. I hope you also have the privilege of discovering this precious congregation and receive the blessing of being showered by their love, as I have. For more information on Hope Reformed Baptist Church, go to hopereformli.net. That's HopeReformedAlly.net. Or call 631-696-5711. That's 631-696-5711. Tell the folks at Hope Reformed Baptist Church of Coram, Long Island, New York, that you heard about them from Tony Costa on Iron Sharpens Iron.
James White of Alpha and Omega Ministries here. If you've watched my Dividing Line webcast often enough, you know I have a great love for getting Bibles and other documents vital to my ministry rebound to preserve and ensure their longevity. And besides that, they feel so good. I'm so delighted I discovered Post Tenebris Lux Bible Rebinding. No radio ad will be long enough to sing their praises sufficiently, but I'll give it a shot. Jeffrey Rice of Post Tenebris Lux is a remarkably gifted craftsman and artisan. All his work is done by hand, from the cutting to the pleating of corners to the perimeter stitching. Jeffrey uses the finest and buttery soft imported leathers in a wide variety of gorgeous colors, like the turquoise goat skin tanned in Italy used for my Nessie Allen 28th edition, with a navy blue goat skin inside liner, and the electric blue goat skin from a French tannery used to rebind a Reformation study Bible I used as a gift. The silver gilding he added on the page edges has a stunning mirror finish resembling highly polished chrome. Jeffrey will customize your rebinding to your specifications and even emboss your logo into the leather, making whatever he rebinds a one-of-a-kind work of art. For more details on Post Tenebris Lux Bible Rebinding, go to PTLBibleRebinding.com. That's PTLBibleRebinding.com.
As host of Iron Sharpens Iron Radio, I frequently get requests from listeners for church recommendations. A church I've been strongly recommending as far back as the 1980s is Grace Covenant Baptist Church in Flemington, New Jersey, pastored by Alan Dunn. Grace Covenant Baptist Church believes it's God's prerogative to determine how He shall be worshipped and how He shall be represented in the world. They believe churches need to turn to the Bible to discover what to include in worship and how to worship God in spirit and truth. Grace Covenant Baptist Church endeavors to maintain a God-centered focus, reading, preaching, and hearing the Word of God. Singing psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs, baptism, and communion are the scriptural elements of their corporate worship, performed with faith, joy, and sobriety. Discover more about Grace Covenant Baptist Church in Flemington, New Jersey at gcbcnj.squarespace.com. That's gcbcnj.squarespace.com. Or call them at 908-996-7654. That's 908-996-7654. Tell Pastor Dunn that you heard about Grace Covenant Baptist Church on Iron Sharpens Iron Radio.
And please make note, folks, that the new website for Grace Covenant Baptist Church in Flemington, New Jersey is gcbc-nj.org. gcbc-nj.org. So disregard the website that you heard in the commercial. The correct and new website is gcbc-nj.org. We're now back with my guest today, Raymond Ibrahim. And before we run out of time, I'll try to squeeze in a listener question after you finish, but I'd like you to summarize what you most want etched in the hearts and minds of our listeners today regarding your book, Defenders of the West, The Christian Heroes Who Stood Against Islam.
Well, if they get it and they read it, I'd like it to open their eyes to the true history of the development of Europe, including Christianity, especially vis-a-vis Islam, or basically an anti-Christian hostile force, and how it really impacted the molding of Europe century after century, or really the Christian world in general before Europe. Because like I said, even where the original primitive church was started, it was essentially suppressed right at the get-go in the 7th century. Also, I think it's inspiring to see men, these European fighters and defenders, who actually, I think too many Christians today make a virtue out of a vice, namely cowardice, and say, well, I am passive and I'm turning the other cheek because I'm a good Christian, when in reality, they just don't want to be inconvenienced. So I think it's inspiring to see what so many otherwise wealthy and powerful Christians sacrificed simply in the name of trying to go and right all the injustices or wrongs that were being committed against fellow Christians. And finally, this isn't to inspire someone to go to war, but to help reconcile the idea that the Christian faith is not opposed to the state basically defending itself through arms and so forth and righting wrongs and protecting the innocent. So I think, like I said, all Christian denominations today in the West are very much paralyzed by this sort of idea that I have to be a doormat or I'm not a good Christian. That's not how it was. That's not how the scriptures, including Jesus, spoke about it. And the early church fathers, Augustine and so forth, just war theory. So I think that needs to be sort of brought back into the conversation, a little more assertiveness when it comes to Christians dealing with the manifold attacks on their faith that are unfolding today.
Well, we have time for one more listener who also wants to remain anonymous. He says, you are beginning to convince me of the position you hold in favor of the Crusades, but I was wondering if you were willing to concede that there were indeed atrocities that occurred by the hands of the Roman Catholic Church during the Crusades. You even brought that up last time.
Yeah, I assume the question is basically, did the Crusaders commit atrocities in the Crusades, basically against Muslims? And my response would be that, yeah, if by our definition of atrocity, certainly that occurred. And you're right, we spoke about it a little before. But again, it has to be understood in the context of what the Muslims were doing. So whatever atrocity you can think of that a Christian committed, I can show you several that Muslims committed that were sometimes much worse and much more horrific. The problem is, if you only hear of one side, okay, if you only hear of the Christians doing X, Y, and Z and never hear what the Muslims are doing, certainly it looks a lot worse. But if you see it in balance, then it's just, it's as they say, warfare. What are you going to do? It's ugly. It's brutal. It's savage.
And even if you want to look at America's Civil War, or as my Southern friends call it, the War of Northern Aggression, the majority of Americans, I believe today, even Southerners, believe that the North was on the right side, the Union Army. This is known as the war that ended slavery. But there were atrocities, gruesome, grotesque, barbaric atrocities committed by some Union soldiers. So we have to remember that in most wars, unfortunately, since you don't have exclusively regenerate, faithful Christians on the battlefields, I'm talking about the majority, there are definitely some, and many perhaps, especially when we're talking about the Civil War, but there were some evil men that performed some very barbaric terrorist attacks, even against women and children. So these things happen. But I want to direct our listeners to a couple of websites. First of all, go to RaymondIbrahim.com, the website of my guest. Ibrahim is spelled IBRAHIM.com, and the first name is Raymond. And you can find out more about him and his writing and how to contact him for speaking engagements and so on. And if you want to also look up the publisher, Post Hill Press, which is also under the name of Bombardier Books, which is an imprint of Post Hill Press, go to posthillpress.com, posthillpress.com. And I also want to remind our listeners, you've been hearing the commercials for the Historical Bible Society. Don't forget that this organization has been founded by my dear friend, Daniel P. Benefuco, attorney at law, who is a very experienced and seasoned and successful serious injury and medical malpractice attorney. No matter where you live in the United States, in all 50 states, he can help you if you have been a victim of a serious injury or medical malpractice. So call him at 1-800 1-800-NOW-HURT, 1-800-NOW-HURT, or visit 1-800-NOW-HURT.com. Please make sure that you mention Chris Arnzen of Iron Sharpens Iron Radio, and make sure that whoever answers the phone tells Dan Buttafuoco this very important fact. I want to thank my guest, Raymond Ibrahim, for being such a delightful guest, an informative and fascinating guest. I want to thank everybody who listened, especially those who took the time to write. I want you all to always remember for the rest of your lives that Jesus Christ is a far greater Savior than you are a sinner.